welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Balanchy. We're presented by BetDSI.com. We use BetDSI.com's weekly odds and our odds posts for PGA Tour events and other big events every week in the world of golf. Gives you a good indication of what the gambling community thinks is going to happen, whether you bet on sports or whether you use them as a gauge for fantasy sports, especially daily fantasy. They're wonderful odds, and you also get a sense of not only the detailed odds, but also where the money is going at BetDSI.com. So it gives you a good sense of where the public feels the money is going to go this week and who's going to do what in a particular tournament. So BetDSI.com is our presenting sponsor this year. Earlier in the week, in our interview-based show, we had Dean Snell on the program. Dean owns Snell Golf, which is a golf ball manufacturer. Dean has been behind some of the most iconic golf balls in the 21st century, in the history of the sport, even. He's been behind the original Pro V1. He was a TaylorMade for the better part of two decades. And he left there in 2014, started his own golf ball company in 2015, and has done really well for himself. And he has a fascinating story about how he got to that point, but also has some really great information if you're a golfer who's just looking to find the right golf ball for them. Whether it's Dean's or not, he has some important things to look for in terms of the testing that you might do to figure out the right ball for you. So that's this week's podcast, if you haven't downloaded that as well. Okay, so this week on the kind of non-interview portion of the show, we wanted to talk about the WGC Dell Match Play, which is the big event of the week. It's at Austin Country Club, and it's proven to be a really good format change. If you know the history of the event, started in, 1999, and the original format was you'd have 64 players, and you would basically play the NCAA men's basketball bracket and work it out that way. One plays 64, two plays 63, and they would all come together in the end, and that would be how the champion is determined. And the problem was always apparent, but no one did anything about it for 15 years. And the problem was that you could lose all of the really good seeds on the first day. And you could lose them because it's just the reality of match play. I mean, these guys who get in this tournament, especially now as the global competition has become even deeper, more difficult, to have the guys that are 64, 63, whoever just slips into the field, those guys can beat the top players in the world in an 18-hole scenario. That's just how match play works. That's the beauty of it. It's also the downside of it from a television perspective. It's also the downside of it from a tour marketing perspective, because you go, okay, well, we just have a whole bunch of craziness and nobody you wanted to see is playing this weekend. I'm very sorry about that. And that doesn't play out very well. So after 15 years of doing this way and players realizing that it wasn't a whole lot of fun for them to potentially just fly in for one match to Arizona and then go home, even if they did get what amounts to $60,000 to show up, which, by the way, I think any of us would do, the PGA Tour, which I know it's the International Federation of PGA Tours that runs the WGCs, but it is the PGA Tour that runs this event. And the PGA Tour decided, okay, well, we're going to change this. We're still going to have 64 players, but we're going to do it more kind of like the World Cup in soccer, where you have group-style play, you have round-robin in that group that determines the group winner, and then you have 16 groups, and then winners from each individual group, they go into the bracket-style tournament, a 16-person tournament that plays out basically over 2 days, and that's how you get your winner. And last year was really good. It was much better. It was more dramatic. Every match meant something, by and large, except on Fridays. And the issue on Friday, the third day of the round robin, the last day of the round robin, was that you had anywhere from about a third of the docket of the 32 matches meant nothing for both players. It just meant nothing because the way that the point system worked, you either got a point for a win or no points for a loss, and they didn't allow ties. So if you went to an 18-hole match and you were all square after 18 holes, you kept going until there was a winner. And while that made matches more meaningful Wednesday and Thursday, it killed a bunch of Friday matches. So what they decided to do was, for this year, they would offer 18-hole ties. So for one, that preserves players because they don't have to play 19, 20, 21, 22 holes when their peers are only playing 18. And they got a half point if they tied the 18-hole match. So that way you still got something for your effort, kind of like hockey. And in the end, it made the matches today, Friday, more meaningful. Now, there were still 6 matches out of the 32 today that mean nothing. Nothing at all. At least in terms of the group play. But The PGA Tour has also incentivized these guys to give a crap about the matches that don't really mean anything, either for both players or for one player, because what they get paid depends on their group record. So if you don't escape the group, it matters whether you went 1-1 and 1, 1-2-0, you know, 2-1, 0-3-0, you know, whatever that was. There are obviously a bunch of different records that you can have playing three matches. And that's basically going to determine how these guys get paid for the, 48 guys that don't come out of group play. So I like that. It incentivizes guys to play all three rounds, all three matches. Like, they mean something, and it keeps everything meaningful through Friday. And then, obviously, this is kind of cut day, first of three in a row, because you have a cut down from 64 to 16 today. Then you go 16 to 8 in the morning tomorrow, and 8 to 4 Saturday afternoon. And then you have two more cuts. You have 8 to 4 on Sunday morning, Easter Sunday. And then in the afternoon match, you determine a champion. So I like this format change a lot. I think it's a great idea. It's really, they got it right. And I understand that you could have other issues where you can make other changes. I think one good one brought up, I saw on Twitter, and you're going to have to forgive me for not giving proper credit. I just saw it on the Twitter.com, which was to reseed the 16 players who get out of group play based upon their seeding in the tournament. I think that's a good idea, too. Do that in the NHL playoffs. You reseed after each round. I think that's a great idea. It makes it a little bit more difficult for a poorly ranked player who managed to escape group play to still get to the title. I think there's still an advantage to being the higher ranked player because, again, it is a vagary of match play. And we mentioned at the very outset of talking about this that I truly believe any of the 64 players in this field could beat each other in an 18-hole situation. So you should be able to get an advantage if you are a higher-ranked player getting into the field, not only for group play, which you really don't necessarily get that advantage. I mean, it's random draw from the following tiers of players, the next 16, the next 16, the next 16. So you don't necessarily get an advantage there that's randomized. So you get the advantage if you escape group play and you can get reseeded to play the weakest, supposedly, player in the field. I think that makes more sense. I think that's a good idea. That's the only way I could really see them dramatically improving this, and even that, I don't know if it would be classified as dramatic. I would say it's a substantial improvement, but I don't think all of a sudden we go, oh, well, now it's the best ever. And I think that this improvement is really important. It makes the WGC Dell Match Play an event that guys are going to feel good playing. I think having it in Austin and this Austin Country Club has proven to be excellent. I think for some guys it takes a little adjusting. It is a Pete Dye golf course. I did not know that going into it, but it is a Pete Dye golf course. So there's always adjustment on Pete Dye golf courses, and even fans of Pete Dye dislike some Pete Dye golf courses. So even if you're a fanboy of his, when you play it, you might go, oh, this one is not for me, and not do well. And I think that sentiment came about from Rory McIlroy, who obviously has won a major on a Pete Dye golf course. He won the PGA Championship on Kiawah Island at the Ocean Course, and then comes here and goes, well, I'm starting to get used to it. I'm starting to like it. I'm starting to understand why Pete Dye did things certain ways. That's two rounds in, and the practice rounds into it. So I think it's a good match play golf course. There are enough short holes. It's firm enough. It's fast enough that guys can take advantage of their power, but it could also put them into deep trouble if they are too powerful or if they're offline with those shots. There are great views of the water. There are going to be a lot of boats out there this weekend on the river, which is really, the lake is the dammed up part of the river. And you're going to see a lot of boats out there, a lot of raucous cheering. I think that's going to be great for the tournament. I think that it's good for the PGA Tour to go to Austin, Texas, which has become a more and more important city in the American landscape, arguably the international landscape. I know it's not a very large city compared to the others that host PGA Tour events, the bigger ones certainly. But it really is great to have a city that has a unique character, that has a developing character, developing population too. It's becoming a population center in Texas. And it's a cultural influence. You have South by Southwest. You have great culinary stuff going on in the city. Obviously, UT Austin, big research bed. So it's really cool for the PGA Tour to make that move to Dell, to Austin, on the back of Dell, which obviously has its headquarters there. This tournament could move in a couple of years. There is a project on paper that could be approved that amounts to a municipal golf course designed by Coren Crenshaw. Joe Ogilvy is a former PGA Tour player. He is involved heavily in it, trying to get the city to get behind it. I think that would be even cooler if you could bring the match play to a public course. I thought it was wonderful last year to have it at TPC Harding Park. No matter what you think of Harding Park, I personally love it. But I think to have it there was a really great thing because the public could go play that golf course. I think the more chances that the PGA Tour has to routinely go to public golf courses, or at least ones that are publicly accessible, I think that's huge. I think that's something I like about the Players' Championship. You could go play the stadium course. It's going to cost you a boatload of money, but you can go play the stadium course. And those are the kinds of things you don't typically get at major championships, and maybe that's just kind of the level that they're at, that they go play the places even they'd have a hard time getting on in some cases. And the public would never get on because we don't have the money or the influence. But I think that having at least some level of PGA Tour events that are important that you could get on is big. Having the ability to go play Bay Hill. I played Bay Hill, I think, 3 or 4 years ago when I was down in Orlando, one of the two trips I make every year down there, 2 or 3. And it was such a cool experience because I can imagine all of the shots that the players were playing that I've seen for decades on television. And it meant a lot to me to be able to try to recreate some of those. I didn't play from 7,400 yards. It was really windy, and it was December, and so it was kind of cold for Florida. But it was a wonderful experience, and I think that's something that a lot of people look forward to doing, is to try to recreate the shots that they see on TV, the iconic ones that they remember, try to make the 25 or 30 footers that Tiger Woods made 2 years in a row in the 72nd hole to win the tournament. All of those things that, you know, those things come up, and I think people remember them and they want to try to see if they could do it too, obviously with a totally different sense of pressure than these guys face week to week. So that's where we're going for the weekend. Obviously we have a cut down to 16 players today, and then we'll go into the bracket style tournament for the weekend. Again, should get some great matchups out of this. We have a couple of good ones already live today, and I'm sure you're probably watching them or have watched them by the time that you listen to this. Patrick Reed and Phil Mickelson, both 2-0. They're going to play against each other. I think that's going to be really cool. I have a feeling that Patrick Reed somewhat models himself after Phil Mickelson, which I find fascinating. And then you have trademark good buddies, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, facing off against each other. Spieth is guaranteed no worse than a playoff to get into the round of 16. And Justin Thomas is a talent that is developing, that has an opportunity to make the Ryder Cup team for one, and two is an opportunity, if he can refine his game just a little bit, not a lot, just a little bit, to regularly contend in majors and perhaps win a few. So the Masters hype is here. We obviously have a good weekend with Easter weekend to be able to play some attention to match play and give it the love that it deserves. I do think that the PGA Tour should give more match play, more opportunities on the schedule. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But the hype for the Masters is here. This is the last weekend to get into the top 50 in the official World Golf Ranking to qualify for the tournament. And then next week at the Shell Houston Open, the winner, if not already qualified, qualifies for the Masters. So there are ultimately not even but a handful of spots left. And the really intriguing thing so far, I think, this year is that the field has not swelled in size, primarily because of the people that have won. They were already in the Masters. You think about Jordan Spieth. You think about Bubba Watson, Adam Scott, Jason Day. High-name players, big-name players that were, they were already there. Jason Duffner's already there as a PGA champion. Guys who got into the FedEx Cup already won this year. So there haven't been a whole lot of surprise winners where you go, oh, hey, that guy wasn't in the Masters. Even Fabian Gomez was in the Masters. So there weren't really a whole lot of surprises so far in terms of adding to the field. So it'll keep it at a reasonable size. It won't threaten 100. It'd probably be the highest that we get is 95, I think, based on the math I can think about right here off the top of my head. That's a good field size. You're going to avoid having that Masters shatter again this year. Well, do we have to restrict the field size because there's too many people? Because the Masters wants to keep it in the 90s. They don't want anybody over 100. They don't want 100 players in the field. It's not meant, that golf course is not meant to do that with a 1-tee start. They don't want a 1-in-10 start under any circumstance. So they want to keep the field where they can maintain that level, that first tee start. And I think they're going to do that. Now, of course, we obviously know the big name guys that are in the field, the players that are doing well that are in the field, the Masters champions from the last 5 years are basically all playing great golf right now in some way or another, or have already won this year. You've got McIlroy, who's playing okay. He's been in contention in two tournaments, three really, and not won any of them, but he's been in contention. He struggled with putting. He struggled with Sundays. He had a backdoor top 25, almost backdoor top 25 with a 65 at Bay Hill, so maybe that's a confidence booster. Maybe this will be. He's 2-0 so far at the match play. That's a guy to look at. Ricky Fowler is a guy to look at who has already won this year but hasn't been able to seal the deal on the PGA Tour, lost the playoff in Phoenix to Hideki Matsuyama. He's playing great golf. So even the Masters champions in the last 5 years plus the rest of the Big Four, all great golf, and that's super exciting for a golf fan. We're going to get a great Masters tournament this year. But there is still a segment of the golf population that wants to know, is Tiger Woods going to play in this damn thing or not? And we'll find out today at 5 p.m. It's a 4 p.m. local deadline for the tournaments on Fridays before the tournament to declare whether you're going to play in them or not. So we'll know at 5 p.m. today whether or not Tiger Woods is going to play in the Shell Houston Open. There are rumors, if you believe the internets, that Tiger is intending to play the Shell Houston Open. Now, mind you, and we've tweeted about this, Tiger's never played the Shell Houston Open. And we did the easiest of reporting to talk to the head pro at the Golf Club of Texas in Humble, Texas, formerly known as Champions Golf, or Champions Golf Club, Champion, whatever. And they said that, Joe LaCava has not scouted the golf course, as has been postulated by one of many anonymous Twitter accounts that feel they have secret information that no one else has. And, of course, we'll touch on this in a minute, there's no sense that Tiger's going to play. And from anyone who knows anyone, there's no sense that he's going to play anytime soon. And I don't mean like the Masters. I mean like the PGA Championship in July. Like that. That's what I think the theory is, kind of running theory is, that late in the summer for when Woods would come back. I have no inside knowledge on this. I have a relationship with some people in Team Tiger, but I don't think they know, or if they do know, they're not saying. And so you probably shouldn't trust anonymous people on the internet. That's where we're going with this in a minute. But I don't get the sense that Tiger Woods is ready to play. And if he is, awesome. Golf can use it. Golf can always use his presence. He will be a lovely distraction as the people who have a chance to win actually play the Masters. I'm a golf fan. I mean, I was a golf fan before I became a golf writer. So I'm still a golf fan, even though I have to kind of shield some element of enthusiasm that I have for the sport. But even if Tiger comes back and plays, I think that's a bad decision. Because unless he has dramatically improved since the end of February when he took that video of him hitting 1 3-quarter 9-iron meekly into an indoor simulator net and then probably doing nothing else for the rest of the day. Unless he is transformed into a guy who can belt 200 golf balls a day, walk the kind of demanding golf course that Augusta National is. There's a lot of elevation change at Augusta National you don't see on TV. It's there. It's a demanding course to walk, even if you're a spectator. It's demanding to walk as a player. And then you have the challenge of the Masters, the pressure of the Masters, and all of a sudden your back and your joints and your legs and all those things, they don't feel so great. So Woods has to be able to not only hit golf balls and hit them well, he's got to be able to get around a golf course on his feet, not in a golf cart, not in a car, none of that. He's got to be able to do it on his own. And I just don't foresee that that's what happened. So when you're on the Twitters or the Facebooks or message boards or whatever, and you hear from someone who has no, doesn't put their first name on anything, doesn't even put their full name on anything, and they say, oh, I have a guy or a girl who knows that this is going to happen to so-and-so, please, God, do not believe them. Just there are open secrets in golf, and many of them have to do with apparel and equipment. Those you can believe. Typically, people in both sides of that agreement, the player side as well, the manufacturer or the creator of the equipment or the apparel, they kind of they're blabbermouths. They're open secrets. That's okay to understand and follow and be interested in. Anything else? Probably not. It's just the way it is. And that's okay. You got to take that kind of stuff with a grain of salt. You can't just all of a sudden believe someone who has no pedigree whatsoever and has no credibility whatsoever and no accountability whatsoever. The last part is super important to me. You have to have accountability. If I screw up in reporting something to you on Golf News Net or Yahoo or wherever, it's my fault. It's not the source's fault. You don't say, oh, I got a bad source. I chose to believe the bad source. Now, that doesn't happen. I just gotta have to have a sense for these things. But if you have a sense for those things and you put your name to it, then when you say something, it actually means something. Versus the contrary, where you just keep throwing stuff at the wall and seeing if it sticks like spaghetti. If you do that, then you have no credibility, and I don't know why anyone would believe you, but there are people who will. So, all that to say, I don't think Tiger Woods is playing the Masters. I don't think he's playing the Houston Open. I don't think he's playing before the U.S. Open. All of those things could be wrong. That is all pure speculation, but there's nothing to suggest that all of a sudden Tiger Woods is going to be able to play four rounds of golf, plus two practice rounds, and deal with all the stress that comes with playing in the Masters, based on what we saw at the end of February. I could be wrong. We're a week away from the first major championship of 2016, the ANA Inspiration, which is the first major on the LPGA schedule, first of five at Mission Hills. It's the second year known as the ANA Inspiration. It used to be the Kraft Nabisco Championship. It used to be the Dinosaur. And women's golf is in a fascinating place right now. And I'm sure as I'm saying this, some of you are going, oh, is he really going to do this? Yeah, I want to talk about the LPGA. The LPGA deserves to be talked about. Because there's so much good golf being played right now on the LPGA. You have Lydia Ko, who is, when she is not winning, basically finishing second. You have Lexi Thompson, who's already a winner this year. She has supplanted Stacey Lewis as the highest-ranked American player. She's 21. That's pretty incredible. You have Hannah Jang, who is absolutely delightful in her rookie season. She's what, sixth in the world now. She has cool dances when she wins, the single ladies dance, which I don't know. I understand that South Korean culture is not a show-off culture, but how can you not love that she has that kind of enthusiasm about winning? It is really boring to watch guys and girls just kind of fist pump to themselves and wave to everybody when they win. Do a somersault, a dance, a nice hug, something. Show some emotion. Show some character. And that's what Hannah Jang does. I love that. Se-young Kim won the Founders Cup last weekend. She had a final round 62 to tie the 72-hole scoring record in LPGA history at 27 under par. Now, yeah, Lydia Ko finished in second at 22 under par, and another player finished in third at 20 under par. Nonetheless, if you shoot 27 under par for 72 holes on a golf course, I don't care where it is, that's pretty incredible. And so the scoring is great. The players that you expect to do well are, when the ones that you didn't, are delightful. The LPGA is in a great place right now. And I got asked a fascinating question by Steve Bortstein, who hosts me on his show in New Mexico every Wednesday morning. We've been doing it for like 6 years. And he asked me, in light of the comments made by the Indian Wells Tennis Tournament CEO, who has now resigned, about equal pay in golf, or in tennis, I should say, whether there's an issue about equal pay in golf. And I don't think that there is an issue. That's not to say that I don't think women should make more money playing golf. They basically earn, the LPGA players earn about 1/5 to 1/6 what the PGA Tour players do on a tournament-to-tournament basis. For the season, it's dramatically different because you have all this bonus money from the FedEx Cup. The FedEx Cup is basically $35 million. The race to the CME Globe purse, or the bonus pool, is much lower. It's $1 million to the winner, not $10 million to the winner. It's front-loaded. So all of those things kind of accelerate the difference. They multiply the difference between men and women week to week from the PGA Tour to the LPGA Tour. Now, the interesting thing is, outside of the big tournaments on the European Tour, so the events in the Middle East where the purses are maybe $2 and $3 million, but the top names go to play because they get $1 million to show up. If you go outside the WGCs and a few of the European-based events, so the Scottish Open, the French Open, those are events with fairly large purses. if your run-of-the-mill European Tour event is comparable in terms of purse to the LPGA. So in terms of trying to grow the sport, in terms of trying to grow opportunities, Mike Wann, the commissioner of the LPGA Tour, has worked as hard as anybody to do that. He has developed the Symetra Tour, which is their basically the web.com tour. He's expanded opportunities through that. So it used to be five players. Now it's double that who get LPGA status. They now have tournaments with a dramatic increase in prize money thanks to Symetra committing to another term as the title sponsor. They have a matching program to increase purses to make it more likely for a player to have a livelihood on the Symetra Tour, or at least try to break even before they get to the LPGA Tour. That's awesome. The U.S. Women's Open purse has gone up thanks to Fox Sports overpaying by a lot to have the USGA contract for 12 years, 11 to go. And those are all good things. I think we could have a really interesting debate about equal pay in golf. And I don't know which side. I know which side is winning because it's the economics. I'd be curious to hear what you thought about it. And I don't want you to break it down to like women should do. I don't want to hear misogyny. I don't want to hear anything. I want to hear rational, reasonable arguments one way or the other. Why the LPGA should basically play for the same money every week, or why it should be improved but not equal, or why it's fine the way it is. And I think that I've heard the argument enough times for the way that it is because that's economics. That's what the market is willing to bear. I understand that. I'm willing to concede that. I think equal pay is probably a bridge too far because it's not totally a comparison between tennis and golf. Women's tennis has a number of superstar players that they really transcend culture. They fit into that conversation of first-name athletes in all of sport. We don't really have as many of those in the LPGA. Lydia Ko is becoming that name. Beyond that, you have MB, but MB does not have that level of name recognition. Lexi Thompson could be that, but is getting there, just isn't there quite yet. I think that there's got to be somewhere in between. Because ultimately, yes, this is an economy. This is what a sponsor is willing to pay. Mike Wann's not going to gouge people to all of a sudden have $6 and $7 million purses every week from $1.5 million to $2.5 million. It's not happening overnight. So the LPGA positions itself as a bargain, as an opportunity to invest in a killer product at a fairly reasonable price as opposed to the PGA Tour, where the companies still make that investment. They're just maybe I'm not saying they're getting gouged, but they're making a bigger investment. And these companies prove to them it's a value, but it's not the exceptional value of the LPGA is, in my opinion. And you got to get somewhere in between. I mean, I every year in the PGA Tour nowadays, they're anywhere between 85 and 100 millionaires in terms of money list. You are lucky to have 10 on the LPGA Tour annually right now. That's got to meet somewhere in the middle. And especially down to the bottom end of the scale. You have to find ways to make players that have it be reasonable to be on the LPGA. Mike Wann has worked extremely hard to get the LPGA schedule to have more domestic events. So for players that are based here, and that is by and large the majority, the overwhelming majority of players that are based in the United States, even if you're not born here, you're based here. For players to be able to go from tournament, to compete 20 to 25 times a year, and to at least make money if they play well enough so that they can pocket something at the end of the year. So they're not just living to live. They can build something for a retirement. They can build for a life after golf. They can build to have things that are beyond just golf things. I think that's important. That's where we can go. And if you, I would be interested to hear from you, the listener, if you want to make that argument that, yeah, I think that the LPGA should play for equal prize money. I doubt that that is going to be the sentiment, but I would love to hear it if you haven't. And if you're on the other end of the spectrum, I so long as you're not misogynistic, I would be interested to hear that too. So you can tell me that on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy or at Golf Newsnet on Twitter, or leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. I know it is exceptionally difficult, and iTunes is terrible software, but if you do listen to us that way, please do. We only have 5 reviews, and we've been doing this show 12 years, so we'd love for you to do that for us. We really, really appreciate it. It helps us get featured, it helps more folks see what we're doing every week, and helps us have a bigger conversation, which is ultimately what we're trying to do here. Next week on the show, we will talk about Shell Houston Open. We'll talk about the final spots for the Masters. We'll know what happened here at the match play. We'll get a sense of what's happening at the ANA Inspiration and more what's happening in the world of golf. Until then, like I said, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes or shoot me a note, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com or on Twitter @RyanBalanji. Love to hear your comments and feedback on the show. You can also check out our best golf podcasts list on golfnewsnet.com. We listen to a bunch of podcasts just like you do. Many of them are in the world of golf. There are a lot of good ones that we present here at GNN on GNN Radio as well on iTunes. And there are also a bunch of others that we don't do that we listen to that we hope you will be interested in supporting as well. And finally, check out GNN Plus, which is our membership subscription service. $30 a year or $3 a month. You get a tremendous value, a no-ad experience. You get exclusive fantasy content and research. We're actually working on publishing a fully-fledged database of PGA Tour results from the last 5 years that you'll be able to query to do your own research each week. We'll do it based on the tournament, the course, the player, the year, state, designer, grass. It's going to be really, really cool. I'm very excited to have it ready for you for the Masters. So we have that available too. And on top of that, you also get exclusive discounts, including to Golfsmith, Bogey Box Golf Club with DST Golf, and more we're working on every single day for you. So it's a great value. It's worth more, well more, than the $30 a year or $3 a month. So check it out at golfnewsnet.com. Until next week on Tuesday or Wednesday when we have our interview podcast, I'm Ryan Balanchy. Thanks so much for supporting our show, and we'll see you next time on the 19th hole.